prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And we're closing out No Rules November. But what's been happening this month? Have you seen anything this past month in November? Anything exciting, Erica?
Yeah, few things. We haven't done this in a while, you know, like our little sort of what we've been watching, like out in the theaters.
Yeah.
But a couple nights ago, John and I went to Weird Wednesday, and it was The Unholy Rollers, which neither of us had seen before. 35 nice. Millimeter print, very sweet. Busted. There were lots of issues with...
Did it shut down ever or no?
Almost. Like, there was like a few times where the screen went black and you could just hear the audio or something. Like, so, I mean, it was a true experience.
It was
good. John really liked it. I thought it was okay. I think, you know, the main character played by Claudia Jennings, Karen, is pretty unlikable. So,
didn't do it for you.
Didn't quite do it for me, but it was fun. And, so that was good. And then John's actually... We have tickets for next week's Weird Wednesday, which is I Know Who Killed Me. It's that Lindsay Lohan weird movie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. John's super excited about it. I'm like, whatever, I'll go. And it's a 35 millimeter print.
It is?
Because it's 2007. So it's like right at the end of that. So
that's next week?
Yeah. So I'm curious I'm curious to hear how Laird's going to pitch that one before he plays it. So
that's awesome.
And then we're also going to AFS today to go see Cooley High. So that should be fun.
Cooley High's great. Yeah.
I'm excited. Neither of us have seen it before either. So it's going to be a bunch of first time watches coming out for that. And then one movie I've seen many, many times.
Yeah.
But never this way before. And you were there too.
Yes. Suspiria.
Yeah.
It was the 45th anniversary of Suspiria. And this was a special screening at the Paramount here in Austin. Well, it's a tour he's doing. It's a world tour, international tour. Claudio Simonetti is doing the original score live to a screening of Suspiria, which was amazing to watch. We saw Fabio Frizzi do the Beyond Composer's Cut.
Yes.
Like 2019?
2019.
I think like right before all the good stuff, the shutdown happened.
Yeah.
But this Goblin performance... He and the band did the full live score along with the movie. And then afterwards did like the greatest of Goblin. Amazing set. And the band was amazing.
I had a better time I think it was 2019 as well. He came through and they were doing Deep Red.
That's right. Yeah. During Fantastic Fest.
Right. And that was at Come and Take It. And there were literally 20 people, I think, there. There was like folding chairs set up on the floor and they just played up there. And I was like, fuck yeah. Not that I'm not very happy for them. I'm glad that they sold out.
It was a sold out show, which is crazy.
Huge. But I waited too long to buy my tickets. So I had an obstructed view. And the lady next to me was, so before the show started, you know, she's sitting there. She's like got her phone literally right next to her face watching TikTok videos.
Oh.
But then I was like, whatever. And as soon as the thing starts, she'll put her phone down. I don't care. Which also, you texted during the movie too. Shame on you. I know it wasn't Alamo.
Okay, well, you just mentioned we've seen Suspiria many, many a time.
I know.
This isn't a new experience. It's the Paramount. To me, I felt like it was more of a concert.
Yes.
There was a lot of, I was with my brother Cody. We got upgraded to the opera box seats.
Fancy pants, I know.
Which are awesome. I mean, I was a member when we bought the ticket. So they reached out and said, hey, we noticed you bought, we have these box seats open if you want them. And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah.
Lucky.
We're drinking a lot, but yeah, as soon as Udo Kier popped up, I texted Erica and I was like, Udo, it's Udo. And little hard eyes emoji.
That's fair. No, it's an appropriate reaction. I just, you know, when people, you know,
as soon as I see Udo, I think of you.
I appreciate that, as everyone should. But so lady next to me, coughing nonstop during the movie.
Shit, no.
Nonstop. And she wasn't coughing at all until the movie started. So I don't know what her deal was. And
maybe she thought the volume drowned it out. She was holding it just
for And she was like, and she would, you know, cough and then she would do like the reverse snort thing to like clear her throat.
That's hot.
The whole, yeah, it's super hot. And through the whole fucking movie, she completely ruined it for me. Mm-hmm. How are you in 2022, if you're feeling sick still, and especially if you're coughing like that, how are you still going out in public?
Yeah.
I don't understand these people. So of course, like a couple of days after, I did go home, test myself because I'm fine. But like still, fucking bitch ruined my experience. Like not, and that she's sucks. Lucky I've seen that movie a million times. So yeah, I can see half the screen and know what's happening on the half I can't see. But, and I could see the stage fine. So I could see them playing, but just, I'm just sitting there just so fucking frustrated. Oh my God. So
that sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, yeah, like you said, I'm happy they, first off, I was very surprised they sold out Paramount.
Same, yeah.
I did not think that Goblin would sell out Paramount, which is like, what, maybe 1,200, 1,400 seats?
I think so, yeah.
Which, that's impressive for them.
Yeah.
But I would rather have seen it, yeah, you saw it Come and Take It, or the, yeah, that would have been an amazing show.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much, it was like half the size that Frizzy's crowd was.
Yeah. You know, there was like nobody there at Parrish. That was crazy.
I know. How dare you people? How you miss that. Anyway.
It was shitty weather that night too, though, I remember, but
I don't care.
No, yeah. I was there.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I still had a good time after that. Like the people who, and John and I weren't even sitting next to each other. Like he was sitting right in front of me because again, I bought last minute. And so once the people who were sitting next to him move, I moved up and sat next to him. And I was like, okay, I feel better now that I'm not sitting next to this fucking human coughing machine. Anyway, I'm sure you had a much better experience than I did. It just wasn't a great experience for me because of her. Like one person literally ruined it for me.
Oh yeah. No, I mean that can happen. And that when it does, it sucks. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It's okay though. We can cheer each other up a little bit more. It's end of the year. This is our last official episode. We do have one more coming. We'll talk more about that at the end of the episode, our end of year episode. But we're not going to see each other in December.
Yeah, we're not at all.
I have a Christmas present for you.
Oh, I brought one for you too.
Okay. We also have gifts from Best Friends Animal Society.
Because, is that right?
Yeah, they sent us some mugs there. So underneath that little bag, the gray bag right there, there's mug and sticker.
Oh, nice.
So go ahead and take one of those.
Thank you, Best Friends. Oh, this is a nice big mug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that bag you just moved, that is your Christmas present.
Okay. Let me give you yours. Yours is not wrapped. It's wrapped in
paper. I mean,
here's the box it was shipped in. And
mine's in a exactly. bag, so.
I opened it to make sure it was okay.
Okay. You first.
Okay. Here we go.
Because it's topic appropriate.
Oh, shit, yes. Goblin, Seven Notes in Red, Fabio Capuzzo. So this is what, like an autobiography on the band?
Yes and no. It's
heard.
More about like the songs and things like that.
Analyzes year by year, song by song. This sounds amazing, yes. Thank you
You're
so
welcome.
Much. Thank you. All can right. I keep the bag too?
I mean, you can.
No,
you
can't. Pop it open.
Sweet. Oh, it's Boo Boo. Oh, Mike did this. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about like having a portrait of your, you know, your own pet in your
I
own
have
home.
Her tattooed on me, okay. So it's fine.
So yeah, Mike Esparza, oh. Mike Wonder Bros does these amazing pet portraits, which we talked about. He also backed the Horror Gives Back. He donated some money to the Best Friends. But yeah, I wanted to get a commissioned portrait of Boo Boo.
Oh, I'll post this on Instagram so everyone can see how cute my dog is. she's got her little gray fur, her little Fu Manchu mustache. Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thank you so much for the gift.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. But let's talk about the true gift to us all. And that's Rosalba Neri.
That is a gift to the world, a gift Not Everybody Deserves. She's fantastic. So yeah, let's jump right into the movie.
Yeah.
My pick, it's the Italian Gothic horror, Lady Frankenstein from 1971. So this is No Rules November. I don't have to give any type of viewing stats, but it's streaming on Tubi. I think the Italian version's on Tubi with English subtitles.
Well, actually, I think it's in Spanish.
Oh, is it Spanish?
Yeah, but it's fine.
It worked. There's like so many versions out there, different run times.
Yeah.
There's English dubs. There's Italian. They're all on YouTube. Pick whichever one works best for you.
Yeah.
I picked up the Nucleus Region Lock Blu-ray.
Okay.
And it's gorgeous. It's restored. It has both the Italian and English versions, the full-length versions. Uh-huh. Includes all the scenes that were deleted by Roger Corman, which he, you know, God love him.
Did that Blu-ray have the Truth About Lady Frankenstein documentary?
It did.
Okay. That's where you watched it. Because I was looking around for it, and even my, like, quote, legal adjacent sites only had the German language.
Yeah.
And no one was seeing it anyway, so I didn't even bother.
Yeah, it's a German documentary, which is really great. I have some notes from it.
Okay.
And there was another short documentary, I think it was called Piecing Together Lady Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting.
Okay.
But yeah, the Truth About Lady Frank. It's a good little doc if you can find it. But it's definitely all that stuff. The bonus features on the Nucleus release is pretty good.
Okay.
So quick summary of Lady Frankenstein. So we have a Baron Frankenstein who, along with his assistant, Charles Marshall, they're doing all sorts of Frankenstein stuff, paying off grave robbers to bring him dead bodies so that he can reanimate a corpse. You know, wants to give life to the dead. We all know Frankenstein's story. And as he's working on this, his daughter, Tanya, or Lady Frankenstein, arrives home from school. She herself wants to be a surgeon, very much like her father. She would love to work with him. And on the night of successfully reanimating the creature, the assistant, Dr. Marshall, runs to grab Tanya to show off and celebrate their work. And while that's happening, the monster kills Baron Frankenstein and he escapes. And after Tanya and Marshall find her father dead, she decides to carry on his work and wants to create a second creature to find and kill the first monster who killed her father. Right? She also decides she wants to use Dr. Marshall's brain and heart and put it in a hot, young, dim-witted servant's body. The servant's name is Thomas Stack, who works there in the castle. So that she can have like this perfect mate and have great sex, pretty much.
I mean, yeah.
Marshall agrees to this because he's always loved Tanya. And while the first creature is running around the town, killing a bunch of people, Marshall and Tanya kill the servant, Thomas, and they complete the transplant, giving Marshall a hot, young bod. And he has superhuman strength, just like the other creature. And then during this time, subplot stuff, Thomas's sister shows up and she's looking for her stupid brother and the police are involved and we'll talk about how it all ends.
Sure.
Very, very melodramatic stuff. It's good. It's good. So Lady Frankenstein was directed by Mel Wells. Aureliano Lupi is credited as a co-director and Lupi doesn't have really many other film credits. He worked predominantly as a production supervisor on a bunch of Italian films, but Mel Wells, he directed or kind of co-directed in most of his credits, most of his films, a handful of other films, mostly like these unknown action thrillers, The Last Mercenary, Our Man in Jamaica, Joyride to Nowhere from 1977. His only other horror film is a movie he also wrote called Man-Eater of Hydra from 1967. It's also known as Island of the Doomed. I watched this on YouTube. And it was just okay.
Okay.
It feels completely inspired by Little Shop of Horrors, which he starred in.
That makes sense. Wells.
Cameron Mitchell stars, though.
Oh.
He plays this baron who crossbreeds these plants to become cannibalistic plants.
Okay.
And he lives on a remote island. These vacationers go there and they all start getting killed off by these plants. But unlike Little Shop of Horrors, it tends to focus more on horror than humor.
Okay.
And it just doesn't work with the subject matter and the way the characters are kind of written. It had some cool effects. Like at the end, the jungle comes alive and starts killing one of the characters. But most of the kills are off screen. It's just not very effective. It's pretty boring. It does have a great final shot, though. So short runtime. You guys can check it out if you want to watch another Mel Wells horror, his only other horror.
Or if you're looking for plant horror.
Yeah, or plant horror. Maybe for like a Horror Gives Back, we'll do plants, killer plants. Mm. That's boring.
Yeah.
There's no, like two movies.
There's plenty, the but they're not very good.
Yeah. The Ruins is good. It's fun.
It's okay. Day of the Triffids is one of my favorites. Mm.
But yeah, Mel Wells, he's probably most well known as being like a cult film actor, particularly in Roger Corman productions. He was an American actor born in New York City. He first started acting in the early 50s, picking up small roles in Westerns, crime thrillers, a lot of movies I've never heard of or watched. His first Corman role, though, was in the 1957 sci-fi horror Attack of the Crab Monsters.
Oh, okay.
Which Corman directed. And then this established a working relationship between Wells and Corman. Wells also acted in Corman's The Undead in 1957 and Rock All Night, which I think was Dick Miller's first leading role. He was the leading
We talked about that.
Yeah. But Wells' biggest role was in Roger Corman's Little Shop of Horrors, where he played the role of Gravis Mushnik, the flower shop owner. He's fantastic in it. That whole cast is awesome.
Yes. If you want to hear us talk about that movie, you can listen to Anthony's Cult Movies podcast, where we gush about how much we love it.
Yeah.
I think we converted Anthony at least a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he really loved the remake.
Yeah.
Which I like. It's fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the original's where it's at for me. Dick Miller eating carnations. I mean, it's so good. But in the early 60s, Mel's left the U.S. to make films in Europe, mostly Germany and Italy. And this is where he worked on like that Maneater of Hydra movie and Lady Frankenstein. He was apparently fluent in five languages, and he started a dubbing production company, dubbed hundreds of European-made films, as well as like he did films for in Korea, Japanese, pretty much every country. And he was known as the godfather of the dubbing industry. It's where he was like the most of his like profitable success came from. And he wouldn't just cast the voice actors, but he would rewrite some of the dialogue to better fit what the actors were mouthing, but stick with the script. And a lot of the directors just loved working with him because he was really good at that. So yeah, very interesting stuff. He obviously did the dub work here for Lady Frankenstein. Then he and his family moved back to the US, to LA in 1976. It's worth mentioning, but he was married to Annie Wells, who's a very successful, and well-known script supervisor in LA. She was script supervisor for most of Steven Soderbergh's films. She also did like The Hidden, Deep Cover, Independence Day, Scream, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged. So many, like her credits were really impressive. Then the producers for Lady Frankenstein, Mel Wells, also included Roger Corman, who I mentioned. There's Umberto Bersado and a man named Harry Cushing. I think he's Harry Cushing IV. And he's actually the main reason behind Lady Frankenstein getting made. So apparently he was this trust fund kid coming from the Vanderbilt family.
Oh,
Harry Cushing. He had a crazy amount of money. When he lived in Hollywood, he was romantically linked to Joan Crawford, Marilyn Monroe, Gloria Swanson. But in the 1950s, he moved to Rome. And in the late 60s, he became heavily involved in film, mainly because he was completely infatuated with a new Italian star, Rosalba Neri. And he wanted to work with her so badly. And he was pursuing her, you know, romantically, obviously. He created a production company called Condor International Productions, which his first film was a film he produced with Neri called The Devil's Lover from 1972, which I watched.
You watched it for Horror Gives Back, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It had Rosalba Neri in it. So yeah, it's worth watching.
Is that the one where she gets naked and gets bathed in blood, or is that the other one?
That's The Devil's Wedding Night.
Okay.
Which, you know, he didn't produce that, but
I'm sure he watched it.
Everybody who loves Rosalba Neri has watched that. I'm guilty. But, you know, after he produced The Devil's Lover, he was still pursuing Neri. Mm. So he wanted to make another movie. And he approached Mel Wells, who was living in Rome, Italy, and he approached him with a screenplay titled Lady Dracula. Right. And he told Wells, like, I'll produce it. I'll take care of everything. You just got to make sure Rosalba Neri stars in it. And Wells is like, sweet. You know, you'd never get an opportunity where somebody comes up and says, like, I just want you to, you know, direct this movie. So he's like, let's do it. He put together the shooting schedule, set designers. He had all these obligations in place for the film. And before they were scheduled to begin shooting, Wells found out that Cushing didn't actually own the script to Lady Dracula. He never purchased the rights. It belonged to some actor. named Brad Harris. And he, you know, he was approached by Wells and Cushing, and he's like, I don't want to sell it. I'm going to make this movie at some point.
Yeah.
And he did in 1978, like a German movie called Lady Dracula.
Okay.
So Wells had all these obligations, and he was like, well, shit. So he locked himself in, you know, like into a hotel room in Rome with his friend, Edward De Lorenzo, who was a TV series writer. And they quickly wrote Lady Frankenstein in about 3 weeks. So that's how Lady Frankenstein came about. Cushing was just wanted Rosalba Neri, like sexually. I mean, he was so infatuated. After Lady Frankenstein, he made another movie. He produced one more movie with his Condor Internationals, and that is Smile Before Death.
Ayo.
Ayo. The movie, my first pick for Giallo January for this year. And, you know, it's all full circle. And I got to say, it all paid off because Neri and Harry Cushing were married in August of 1973.
Don't. Okay.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
And then they divorced like immediately after.
Well, yeah.
There was a Mel Wells had said too, this was online. It might have been on Wikipedia, but Mel Wells was like, yeah, Neri said that this dude, Harry Cushing was, you know, he was just kind of, you know, kind of a slimy, like he never worked a day in his life. He was made of money, and she didn't find him very attractive, but he was very confident and obviously pursuing of her. So I guess she caved. I mean, I don't know.
Ugh.
He maybe paid her a lot.
That's gross.
But they're not together anymore.
Good.
Anyway, so more money was needed to complete Lady Frankenstein. So Wells went to his old friend, Roger Corman, right?
Of course.
Always. And they struck up a deal that Corman would get the American distribution rights for his New World Pictures. Of course, in Corman distribution fashion, he cut all the fucking scenes that he thought were boring and too long, kept as much violence and nudity as he could. And he liked to do double bills of these movies. So he usually cut them under 86 minutes so he could do these double bills. And also that meant one less reel for theaters to run. So it was cheaper to distribute.
Right.
Lady Frankenstein was actually an original story by a man named Dick Randall.
Pieces.
He wrote the screenplay for Pieces, The French Sex Murders, and The Mad Butcher.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Victor Buono. Woo. He wrote the story, and then that, you know, Wells and Edward De Lorenzo wrote the bulk of the screenplay with contributions from like some of the other producers, like Lupi and Bersado. The cinematography is Riccardo Palottini, and he shot a lot of Antonio Margheriti films like Castle of Blood, Long Hair of Death, and God Said to Cain, which you just watched.
I did. Yeah. I've been meaning to watch that for a while, and then Arrow put it on their Westerns box set, and now it's on Tubi, and it's the restored version. So it looks great. Cool. And I'd been really looking forward to it because, you know, Klaus Kinski, it's okay.
It's just okay.
Yeah. Kinski, I can't remember his character's name, gets pardoned after being in prison for, I think, 10 or 15 years. And he was wrongfully imprisoned, and so he goes after the people that were responsible for it. It's just very, like, I know exactly where this is going.
Right.
And but as much as I love Kinski, like, he doesn't really do much. And when he's dubbed, like, I hate it when Kinski, there's certain people when they get dubbed, I'm just get mad. Like, if you dub, like, Franco Nero or Klaus Kinski, I just get annoyed. I'm taken out of it to a certain degree, so...
Ideally, it would have been great if, you know, one specific dubber was for like an actor for these type of movies. But obviously, that's a long career and it doesn't work. But
right. I mean, it's pretty frequent that like there's certain voice actors, especially in Italian films, that you hear all the time, sometimes for the same actor. But it's never. Yeah, you're right. It's never consistently always the same person. But I mean, I'd still recommend it. It's like it's worth a watch, but it's fine. I think I give it 3 stars.
So, okay.
Yeah.
But it looked great. Did it look, was it shot well?
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah. Cause I thought, you know, I think Riccardo Palottini as a cinematographer, his stuff looks good. He also did Fulci's Massacre Time with Franco Nero and Luigi Cozzi's The Killer Must Kill Again. So he's kind of an Italian horror pro.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do want to check out And God Said to Cain. I like a good, okay, Western. Okay, the original score is Alessandro Alessandroni, which is another great name. He scored Killer Nun, The Devil's Nightmare, Enzo Castellari's Any Gun Can Play. And lastly, the special effects, the crew. This is my last crew member. I don't know if you have anybody else you want to talk about. Carlo Rambaldi.
Hell yeah.
So he's one of our favorites. So at the time, 1971 for Lady Frankenstein, he was mainly focusing just as an artist, as, you know, doing his own art. He had worked on a few films prior, but in Lady Frankenstein, he took care and he handled not only like Frankenstein's makeup, the creature's makeup, but he did the fake bats.
Yes.
Which I know you love always. Fake
he did
bats.
The fake bats in that movie I watched for Horror Gives Back, the Nightwing.
Yeah.
That's on. Yeah.
Because anyway. it looked like the cover of the Night Flyer.
Yeah. I think it is Nightwing. But yeah, that maybe there he those are leftover fake bats.
That's what they have to be, because he also did the fake bats, or the same bats that I heard in an interview on the bonus stuff from Fulci's Lizard in a Woman's Skin.
Okay.
And he also used them in Paul Morrissey's Andy Warhol Flesh for Frankenstein.
Okay. I like him. He's repurposing the fake bats.
Yeah. When you got good bats and you have it down, you keep them in a safe box and you keep them locked away for reuse.
Oh my God. If anyone out there has a line on Carlo Rambaldi fake bats, if they're not deteriorated by now, let me know. I'm all about that. I can, because John's like, I have to give you for Christmas. And I'm like, give me a fucking fake bat from Carlo Rambaldi.
You have one. You have one on your shelf.
Yeah,
your
but
physical
those are like
shelf.
Rubber fake bats I got from Spirit Halloween.
They're amazing, though.
They are great. Though, I love them.
But yes, speaking of Flesh for Frankenstein, where he did the bats, he also did all the makeup and all this and the special effects for that movie as well. That movie was a lot of the costumes, the location, the filming location that's in Lady Frankenstein, the sets. Those are all also reused in Paul Morrissey's Flesh for Frankenstein. Yeah, so that's my last crew. The cast, I mean, I don't think we need to spend too much time on Rosalba Neri. We can. You can never not spend enough time.
Spend all my time on her.
Yes, please. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about her so much. I already said Smile Before Death. Yeah. I think we chatted a lot about her. Yeah. If you haven't listened to that episode, check it out. It's badass.
And Arrow has a release of that now.
Yes. I mean, it's a great cast. Obviously, Neri Silvano Tranquilli's in it. Good stuff. But she's obviously very beautiful, amazing in everything she's in. She usually plays these passionate, erotic characters. Just to list some of her movies real quick. Amok. With Barbara Boucher. Another Silvio Amadio, who did Smile Before Death film. Slaughter Hotel. Hercules and the Haunted World. Mario Bava's. Jess Franco's 99 Women. Castle of Fu Manchu. She was in Big Guns, which I loved. One of my favorite watches this year. And she did a ton of spaghetti westerns in the late 60s and 70s. So everybody knows who Rosalba Neri is. She retired from acting at 37, which I don't think I've read about. Maybe I've talked about that. She acted in her last film in 1976. She did like an Italian miniseries in 1985, but she's just like living her best life right now in her 80s and looking hot.
She's waiting for Lance to come sweep her off her feet.
Yeah, I need to. I guess I need to produce three of her movies.
Ew.
No, I know, it's terrible to say. okay, so Neri's father in this, Baron Frankenstein, is played by the American actor Joseph Cotten.
He's slumming it a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in the film for very long.
Yeah.
First off, I mean, his scenes are few and they're pretty short. And apparently the reason for this is the film's budget. He probably cost quite a bit.
Yeah.
The budget is said to be about $200,000 to make this film. So apparently due to cost, his part was rewritten so his character's death would take place earlier in the film than what the script originally had. But yeah, I see what you say that he was kind of slow. I mean, Cotten, he's well known for his noir thriller films from like the 40s and 50s. Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. Touch of Evil, another Orson Welles. He was the lead in The Third Man, Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt. He was in Gaslight with Ingrid Bergman. I mean, his favorite role of mine personally was him as a racist Confederate officer in Sergio Corbucci's The Hellbenders.
Yes, I love that one. There's this other movie, early 1950s, called The Blueprint for Murder. And it's basically about his sister-in-law poisoning a little girl, which happens at the very beginning. It happens off screen, but she does die. look, it's the end of the year. I got to talk about at least one movie where a kid dies. So, but yeah, he's kind of, it's the whole thing where like the woman is really attractive. So he's like, I don't want to be suspicious of her, but I kind of think she is going around poisoning a bunch of people, but that's pretty good.
Blueprint for Murder?
Blueprint for Murder. Yeah. Early 1950s.
Yeah, I think he's a great actor. I mean, in the 70s, that's when he started doing these occult, these Italian kind of cult films.
Yeah.
Films like Lady Frankenstein, Bava's Barren Blood, Island of the Fisher.
Island of the Fishman. That's right. I forgot he was in that.
He was in The Abominable Dr. Fibes in 1971, yeah, which he was very good friends with Vincent Price, apparently. And Price was actually the one who told him to get into horror film. But he told him, if you did it, never do it tongue in cheek. Play it very straight. And I think he kind of did. I think he kind of took it to heart.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen him in something where he's hamming it up. And
yeah,
I think he's always playing it straight. You know, what's funny about him, too, is that he always looks the same.
Like, he does.
Even when he's young, he looks old. And when he's old, like, he looks old, but he looks the same as when he was young. So you think he looks young.
Right.
But it's like, I can't tell the difference between 25-year-old and 75-year-old Joseph Cotton.
Yeah. When you say that, I mean, I'm not going to compare him as a person to this actor, but like James Woods has a face like that too, where he looks old and young at the same time.
That's
to me.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's great. There is a scene in this where he's in the snow and a wagon comes up. He looks like Darren McGavin, like where he's getting ready to change the tire. Like, what are you doing here? What are you? So mom said I could help. Like, he looked just like, anyway. But no, yeah, he pretty much popped up in every genre, which I love. And he acted until he physically couldn't act anymore. He suffered a heart attack and stroke in 1981, which affected his speech. But he ended up writing an autobiography. He passed away like in the mid 90s, but he wrote an autobiography called Vanity Will Get You Somewhere. And I want to pick it up.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting to read. He was like really close friends with Orson Welles, so I'm sure there's some pretty good stories there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Joseph Cotton. Okay, other quick cast members. Swiss actor Paul Muller plays Dr. Marshall, the assistant. He's acted mostly in Italian films during his career. He started in theater in Paris, but began his film career acting in just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of movies. IMDb has like 241 acting credits.
It's insane.
Letterboxd has like 155 listed. But he did a lot of like Jess Franco movies, and a lot of Italian movies. She Killed in Ecstasy, Vampiros Lesbos, A Virgin Among the Living Dead, Franco's Venus and Furs, and Count Dracula with Christopher Lee, one of your favorites.
I'm going to revisit it. I'm giving it another chance.
He starred with Barbara Steele in Nightmare Castle. Had a small role in Fulci's A Cat in the Brain, Fangs of the Living Dead. I mean, so many lead and backup roles. And he's great in this. And he kind of carries the movie. I mean, obviously there's Lady Frankenstein, but he is definitely the lead male actor. And then, although a small role, it's worth noting that the character Thomas Stack, that dumb as shit servant with the hot bod, he's played by Marino Massi. And he's not credited in the film, but he's in a ton of Italian films. The Godfather Part Two, he plays Lupo. He's in Tenebrae, The Red Queen Kills Seven Times, Contamination. He's in The Boss with Henry Silva.
Oh, yeah.
The Night Porter. I mean, he's in a ton of movies. He had a very successful career.
There was one point in the film where, and I hadn't looked up the actor yet, where there was like a certain angle where they were showing his face, and I thought it was the son from Arcana for a second.
Oh, yeah. The servant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom. And I was like, is that? And then it wasn't. But anyway.
Yeah. He has a great, I guess that's a wig when he's introduced. And then he has surgery and then they have the wig later. It's just funny.
Yeah.
Okay. And then other roles that I'll quickly go over. You have the police captain played by Mickey Haggerty.
Hell yeah. Crimson Executioner. Bloody Pit of
Bloody
Horror.
Pit of Horror. He's also in Black Magic Rites.
Yeah.
In real life, he was a young Hungarian-born bodybuilder. He won Mr. Universe in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also famous as Jane Mansfield, ex-husband.
Yeah. And father of Mariska Hargitay.
Yes.
From Law & Order SVU. But yeah, I've been trying for years to get John to dress up as Crimson Executioner for me. He just will not do it.
Oh. Like,
Crimson Executioner? It's good shit.
there's the creature. There's Thomas' sister Julia. Overall, the ensemble cast is just kind of minimal. There's a lot of side characters. Yeah. There is the main grave robber, Tom Lynch, who's played by Herbert Fuchs. His last name is spelled F-U-X, so I wish it was Fuchs. Could be, but it's Fuchs.
Yeah.
But he was known as an actor's actor, like among the acting community. He always gave like his all in every production, is what people would say. He was a famous Austrian character actor. At the time, he was one of Germany's most recognizable character actors, popping up in hundreds of films during this time.
Okay.
I guess like a Dick Miller, probably.
Aww.
Like, hey, I know that guy. but yeah, that's the cast and crew for Lady Frankenstein.
Okay. we'll get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
A few more production things I want to bring up. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention the movie poster. There's a few movie posters out there.
Okay.
The one on Letterboxd is the one I want to talk about. It's probably on most sites. But if you look closely, the creature, you have Lady Frankenstein that's standing over you know, the creature who has like his private areas is draped with a sheet. And if you look closely, there's a huge dick under that sheet.
Whoa, hang on.
There's a massive member. It's there. And this apparently was a...
Oh!
Yeah, he's kind of touching
it. How did I miss that?
Yeah, well, apparently this was a joke. Melwell said this was a joke by the artist saying that Roger Corman probably wouldn't see it, but everybody else would. I never noticed it until it was pointed out, but I think the tagline was like creating a creature to, you know, satisfy her insatiable hunger. You know, it was something like that. But yeah, everybody take a look at that poster because there is a big creature dong in there.
She's beautiful. She's evil. And she'll do anything for love. She creates a new, more terrifying monster. And only the monster she creates can satisfy her strange desires. No man can escape her web of terror. There has never been a movie like Lady Frankenstein.
And another thing I want to bring up is the filming location of this movie. Mm-hmm. It's at Castle Piccolomini, and you know, Lady Frankenstein was filmed there. Also, Crypt of the Vampire. This came up in our Horror Gives Back. Right. Crypt of the Vampire, The Devil's Wedding Night.
Oh, that's the one where it had the same shot exterior that you mentioned.
Yeah. It must be like a hill or a perfect shot because it's in here too. I bet this, like all these memories were kind of coming back. Bloody Pit of Horror was filmed there. Uh-huh. Joe D'Amato's The Blade Master. It's a common, apparently, Italian castle that a lot of people used. Well, during that time because it was, you know, an old abandoned castle. And then I do want to talk about the dubbing real quick. Okay. And then we can just jump into the stupid
movie. Go for it.
So I said, obviously, Mel Wells had this dubbing company and he handled Lady Frankenstein. He would cast all the voice actors. Rosalba Neri was dubbed by Linda Gary. And she was a leading voice in Hollywood. She, during that time and then afterwards, she did the voice for all the female characters in He-Man cartoons. Tila, Evil Lynn. A lot of cartoon characters was what she did. Paul Muller is Dr. Marcia. He was dubbed by a black actor named Ray Evans. So the English dub that you hear is by a black actor. And Mel Wells was like, he just nailed the part and done very well. And then Mel Wells himself was the voice actor for, he did the dubbing for Tom Lynch.
Oh, okay.
For Harold Fuchs. And yeah, I mean, so you mentioned Cotton. Mm-hmm. Joseph Cotton was, yeah. What do you think of him as a Frankenstein?
I can't, like...
Didn't work for you?
No. And you know what, though? I feel like there's some bias coming into that, though, because, you know, you... I'm not saying, like, he necessarily did a bad job with it by any means, but, like, you know, if you grow up with, you know, Colin Clive or Peter Cushing... And that's your Frankenstein. Right. Anyone else that kind of comes in, like even the one I mentioned, you know, we keep referring back to Horror Gives Back, but there's a lot of connections. You know, the version of Frankenstein that I watched, I don't even remember who the actor was. I mean, there's also some random Swedish person, not someone like that I know, like Joseph Cotton.
Right.
But I don't necessarily think he did a bad job, but he does seem... bored with this. Like he's not like high energy, excited, like Peter Cushing, like discovering the secrets of life and,
right.
you know, and like you feel it with Peter Cushing. There's no hand washing in this either. So.
That's true. There is not.
So yeah,
He's
fine.
He's very subdued. And I don't know if the intention was to have Rosalba Neri be the more crazy Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But she's not.
She's not either, though.
She's not either. She seems more passionate about like creating a sex doll. Like, I mean, she seems more passionate with carrying on the work. Like, I think the intention maybe was for the Frankenstein character in here for just him to be like, yeah, because he's not a Cushing. He's not very eccentric at all. He's just this subdued kind of.
It's like, I'm just performing some experiments over here. And yeah, Neri is not that energetic as well. I think her main motivation, besides creating the perfect man for herself, which, you know, respect, is also inclusion, because she keeps getting the door shut in her face, even by her own father. Because she went to university to become a surgeon. She studied all the same things that her father has. She wants to be included. And, you know, she talked about how, you know, it wasn't necessarily the name that was a big deal for me at university, but the fact that I was a woman and wanting to do these. And then she comes home and even her father is leaving her out.
Right.
And so I read a funny review by Marna Larsson on Letterboxd. And yeah, her review was, ugh, Dad, why don't you just let me stem? So mid-Victorian. Like, I mean, that's perfect. You know,
That's great.
So I think, and it, so in a way it is, you know, it's a feminist film. So I got some respect for it for that.
Yeah. She does kind of take control especially when, after her father dies.
Yeah.
And there is a scene when she's first shows up coming from school and she's, you know, talking to Dr. Marshall and she says, when I want something, I get it. And that's kind of the setup of the whole mentality for her character. Although maybe it doesn't turn out the way she wants it to.
Yeah.
But yeah, in an interview, Rosalba Neri, she said that the Lady Frankenstein character was evil, negative, but very intelligent. And she said that Mel Wells didn't, because Mel Wells was, in all the interviews I saw, he said he was very pro-feminist. Like, and he kept saying it, the way he said it was kind of obnoxious. He's like, I was feminist before my wife was, you know. And
stuff. Okay.
Like, and I'm like, leave that out in your interviews. But it was multiple interviews where he said that.
Yeah.
But Rosalba Neri, she's like, no, he never mentioned any type of like feminist, you know, messaging. But when I watch it or when I think about it, it is there. So I did like the role a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about Rosalba Neri playing the Frankenstein character better than Joseph Cotten. He just is, he's there setting it up. If you know the Frankenstein story, and like you said, you've seen the Hammer horror ones, which there are a lot of similar. Like watching this, sometimes it feels like a Hammer horror.
It has the feeling for it too, especially because the end.
Yes, especially because the end. So we all know that there's going to be some fire going on. I got a lot of Flesh and the Fiends, Burke and Hare feel in there. There's actually a Burke character, body snatcher mentioned in here. But yeah, the movie is overall pretty subdued. I mean, even when you get to the special effects.
Yeah. I mean, the
the creature.
Your first review of this was like, check out the big brain on the
back. Yeah, as soon as I saw the creature pop up, because he has this huge bald, this bulbous head that's, you know, obviously covered. Apparently the actor stood like he was over 7 feet tall, but he had small platform shoes. And then they added the head, which made him like 9 feet tall.
Oh my
God. And it's all head. Like if you look at the head, it's like 12 inches of forehead.
Right. Like I know the original Frankenstein monster design, it's, you know, he's got a big square head too, but this is just like straight out of this island Earth. Like it's massive.
Somebody in the bonus feature said that they're reminded of the Mars Attacks characters from the Tim Burton movie.
Yeah. Yeah. How many brains does he have in there? You could fit three in that fucking noggin.
It was probably a little swollen after surgery. You know, you gotta wait for it to go down.
It doesn't look great though. Like it looks, I mean, if we're ranking Frankenstein creature makeup.
But I loved I love the exposed eye.
The exposed eye is pretty great.
Because when he first pops up, because I love how it happens first off. So this is kind of something I don't think I've seen in a Frankenstein where, you know, there's the electricity and the creature's face catches on fire.
Yeah.
And they're putting it out. And that's what creates this deformed, visually deformed monster. More so than just his big head.
It doesn't explain the big head, but it does explain
his eye is exposed. His face is, burnt and, very just disfigured. But
and he's surrounded by fake bats.
But when he first pops up in the exposed eye, obviously there's different shots for this throughout the movie, because in that particular scene, the eye's like on his forehead. It's like not even matched up. I'm like, oh my God, this rules. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, Rambaldi was
learning.
He was he was working with what he had. Okay, I would probably get looking at the hearing what the budget was. He is early in his career. Obviously, he probably threw it together. He's like, this isn't going to work. And then Mel Wells or somebody saw it and was like, this is perfect. Okay, let's do it. But there are some decent gore scenes. I mean, there's sliding the brain into the creature's head.
Yeah.
The laboratory set designs are gorgeous. I mean, obviously they're reused in so many movies.
Right.
The body snatcher or the grave robber Lynch is killed by the creature who, so essentially the creature is getting revenge on the people because it was a criminal's brain and they killed the criminal, had him hanged early so they could get the fresh body to Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So he goes and kills all those. And when he kills Lynch, it's pretty funny. He just like casually throws him down and then just smashes him, like hits him over and over again, like a, like a caveman.
Yeah.
And they show his bloody face, which is pretty good. There is a funny scene. So there's in the bonus, in that documentary, what was it? The Truth About Lady Frankenstein. Herbert Fuchs, who plays Lynch, they interviewed him a lot. Very funny man. They interview him and they watch his reaction watching Lady Frankenstein for the first time. Like he's never watched his own movies. Okay. And he's watching it and he's like, he loved the dubbing. He's all, that's the director. He's like, thank you so much, Mel Wells. The dubbing's great. Like, I love it. He was impressed with like the sex scenes and stuff. But during his death scene, they showed him, the creature casually breaks in while he's having sex with like a prostitute and he just throws him down. Remember? Yeah. And he's like, is that it? Is that how I die? And then they show his face. He's all, okay, yeah. And then he's like, wait, you should have stayed on that smashed face a little longer. He's like, I can't believe that was it. Like, that's how I die. It was really funny to watch him play. But that short character, that small role that he plays is great. Cause that Lynch character is such an asshole. Like he's kind of taking control of the situation.
Yeah.
So the effects are okay. The gore is okay. Joseph Cotton as Frankenstein's okay. what do you love about this? I mean, the pacing, it could be boring. It could be a boring movie.
Yeah. I mean,
Captain Harris.
What do I love about this movie? Oh, geez. Fake bats. I love Rosalba Neri.
Fake bats are good.
I mean, here's the thing. I gave this 3 stars. I know you love this. I know you gave it 4 stars. And I watched this and I absolutely understand why you love this and you gave this 4 stars.
Yes.
I think
it doesn't deserve 4 stars.
But no, yeah. No. it's a Lance 4-star movie.
Right.
So it's a 4-star, 3-star movie for Lance. Like to borrow your differentiated rating system. But no, I do think the pacing is pretty good. I think the uncut version drags a little bit more, obviously, because, Corman knows how to move things a little bit more quickly and keep the attention grabbing stuff in. But I think no matter what movie you're watching, once you're in that universe, that Frankenstein universe, I think there's this sort of comfort level, it's where, if you put on any sort of Hammer movie, and especially if there's certain people in it, you know exactly what you're going to get. And even if it's not great, it still is like a warm blanket. If you put on a Shaw Brothers movie, you know what you're going to get. Except if it's a Shaw Brothers horror movie, because you never know what you're going to get. Right. But I mean,
you'll probably get necrophilia though.
Fingers crossed. I don't love the movie. I like it. I appreciate it. It's one of those comfort movies where I'm like, yeah, it checks all the boxes that I want in a Frankenstein movie. And plus Rosalba Neri, she gets naked and even more bonus.
Yeah, there. She does get naked.
you know, I obviously I'm a little annoyed because the monster let the kid live in this. So
yeah, that kid was actually Mel Wells' son, by the way. Really? So okay. That's probably why he didn't want to see his son killed.
What? It's a movie. God, people get so fucking upset about kids dying in movies. Get over it.
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, I think it's great. I agree with everything you said. It does have that atmosphere where from the first shot, you know, you're kind of settling in and it's a comfort movie.
Yeah.
And when you do have Rosalba Neri and Joseph Cotten and recognizable actors, that does help. You know, I've watched the cut version, Roger Corman's cut version, which was like 86 minutes long. It's short. But the deleted scenes, it probably does make it more boring.
Yeah.
But it does actually add to the story and it makes a lot of sense. Like it has an extended scene when Tanya first meets the servant. So there's like this, you could see the attraction right away. Mm-hmm. In the cut version, she's just like, she just mentions them kind of like, hey, let's use, you know, Thomas the servant.
Sure.
Okay. The mob is introduced early when the killings are happening around town. Tanya, there's a lot of scenes where Tanya's just in her father's office going through her notes. So, you know, she's like really learning about it. A lot of scenes between her and Marshall in the lab. Yeah, it establishes the story more. Obviously, I don't think it's necessary. I think Roger Corman knows exactly what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He did cut some of the sex scenes a little short, you know, when they kill Thomas and she's having an orgasm over on his dead body and she's like biting her wrist and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's a little longer in the uncut version, which I recommend you guys watching that scene. the end. So let's talk about the end, but the end sex scene is a tiny bit longer as well.
Okay.
What do you think about that odd, abrupt ending?
I love endings like that.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. You know, Shaw Brothers movies do that all the time. Hammer horror movie. Like, as soon as the fire starts, you're like, you can like start your stopwatch and know that before it gets to 1 minute, the movie's going to end.
Yes.
You know? So I love it when movies end like that.
What's your interpretation of the ending though? So at the end, it's, you know, the whole castle and the laboratory is set on fire and Neri is finally having sex with her creature.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it's what's his name? Marshall's brain and heart and his whole soul is in Thomas the servant's hot body and they're having sex.
Yes.
And he reaches down and starts choking her.
Yes.
And the camera kind of pans out and that's the end.
Yes.
So there's a lot to interpret. Like there could be different interpretations. Mm-hmm. Like it could be, did Thomas's like body somehow take control and is getting revenge on his murderer?
Yeah, I think you could interpret it either way. There's a part of me that's like wants to say, you know, it's keeping the moral of the original Frankenstein in there where it's like, no, this person has to die because they're trying to create life.
Right. They're playing God.
They're playing God and that sort of thing. But, you know, why it happened that way is sort of unclear and up in the air. It's like, well, but he's in love with her, so why would, and he's got a hot new bod, so like why? Yeah. You know,
it made me also think I like the ending first off, because the first time it happened I was like, huh, but you know, and then I thought about it, it could have been because Marshall, I don't think they had sex at that point,
right?
And he was like, he'd been lusting after Tanya for a long time and he's like, oh man, I'm gonna give it to her, you know, like this is it.
Yeah,
I got this hot body. And I think maybe he forgot or didn't know. He was so excited. He didn't realize his superhuman strength was there.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been a kink thing. And he actually, you know, maybe kills her.
Yeah. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to say like he forgot
by accident.
He forgot his own strength. So, yeah. Forget my moral story about playing God now. His, you know, he just forgot his own strength and like, you know, kink got a little out of control. Sorry. Stay safe, folks.
There you go. I mean, also, if you're fucking in fire, you might as well just go out that way instead of burning.
Hell yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, go out right after your orgasm. let your loins burn in the good way, not the bad way.
That's good.
No, that was bad. I got to cut that.
No, keep it. yeah, so I think we both would recommend this movie. I obviously liked it a little more.
Quite a bit more.
Yeah. It doesn't. I'm very generous with my ratings on Letterboxd. Don't take them to heart, people. But this is a great movie. what would pair well with Lady Frankenstein for you? Double feature pick.
Yeah, I think you could go with there's a lot of Hammer movies you could put with this that would, you know, feel at home together in this. But I'm going to go with more of a offspring type double feature. I couldn't come up with a clever name for my double feature, so I'm just going to say it. It's Dracula's Daughter from 1936, directed by Lambert Hillyer, starring the gorgeous and wonderful Gloria Holden as Dracula's daughter. And basically, she is the countess, and she is seeking a psychiatrist's help to cure her vampiric cravings. So unlike Lady Frankenstein, who wants to follow in her father's footsteps, Dracula's daughter does not, but very different mood, very, you know, much more like dark, you know, 30s gothic, that type of horror, as opposed to this kind. But right. I think they, you know, I like the idea of like, let's see what the next generation's got going on.
I like it.
What about you?
So I had a few ideas. I mean, Flesh for Frankenstein, because of the similarities and the locations, the costumes, the Rambaldi. Like you said, there's a lot of Hammer options. I specifically thought of Frankenstein Created Woman.
Yeah.
Fantastic Terrence Fisher entry into that Hammer horror. Peter Cushing, he creates a woman creature using the soul of a murdered man who then takes revenge on those who killed him. Similar to Lady Frankenstein, that first creature.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm going to do a Rosalba Neri double feature.
It's the end of the year. What else would we do?
And I went with The Devil's Wedding Night from 1973. I chatted about this in our Horror Gives Back episode. It was my viewer's choice. Filmed in the same location. Stars Rosalba Neri. Mark Damon plays twin brothers. But Rosalba, she plays this powerful countess living in Castle Dracula in Transylvania. And these two twin brothers are after this century-old ring, which give power over to all mankind, whoever own it. And they want the ring for different reasons. One is turned into a vampire while at the castle. Of course, Neri, as the evil countess, is very evil and sexy. And watching these together is just what you need. And it's basically Rosalba Neri playing that Lady Dracula role that Cushing wanted her to play. So right, that producer wanted her to play. So it works. It's kind of like the original role she was supposed to have when making this Lady Frankenstein movie. So that one's on YouTube. But yeah, The Devil's Wedding Night, 1973 with Lady Frankenstein.
Yeah, I got to watch that one because I wanted to see her naked, getting covered
blood poured on. I mean, it's very like it's almost impossible to pick like what's the best looking Rosalba Neri, you know, like in her movies, like it, yeah. And she acted for such a short period of time, you know, till, you know, young, she retired at a young age that it's, the answer's like all of them.
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
But, and Lady Frankenstein, she is gorgeous, but yeah, I mean, it's The Devil's Wedding Night too. So, but yeah, that's our last movie for 2022.
Yeah, it is. It's not our last episode though. Right. We are going to have an end of year episode coming in a few weeks. Tentatively, I've got it scheduled to come out on the 21st. So I think like 3 weeks from this episode. So we're going to do the same thing as last year. We're going to do our end of year episode. We're going to have Anthony and Lindsay back, who were our guests last year. We're going to talk about our Letterboxd stats briefly, our most watched actors and directors, and then get into our top five new to me movies for the year. So our discoveries or whatever you want to call them. So no 2022 releases. Shout out to RRR. You would have made it if I was doing that. But have you watched that yet?
I haven't watched it yet.
So good.
I know. I need to watch it.
So yeah, this is our last regular episode. We'll have our end of year episode. And then January 4th, we'll be back for Giallo January.
Yes.
That's going to be my pick to kick it off. And we're going to be doing a little interesting Giallo for that. It's not my original one that I had planned because the bootleg copy that I have of it is bad. And also it's not readily available for anyone to watch anywhere. And I don't want to pick something that people can't find easily. So I did change it recently. We are going to be doing A Dragonfly for Each Corpse from 1975, starring Paul Naschy and Erica Blanc.
Nice.
This is directed by frequent Naschy collaborator Leon Klimovsky. And in it, Naschy is playing a police detective investigating a series of murders, mostly of, you know, the undesirable prostitutes, drug dealers, drug users, people like that. Each of the victims has a decorative dragonfly placed on their body. Erica Blanc plays his wife, who tries to help him solve the case, and she spends most of the second half of the film naked.
Great pick.
So this has 643 views on Letterboxd as of this recording. It is currently streaming on Tubi, And it is also in the Paul Naschy Volume 2 collection from Shout Factory, if anybody has that. Nice. It has a commentary from Troy Howarth on there, so I'm going to be rewatching it with that before we record that. And since we're going to be off for most of December, just a few other quick announcements. I did post this on Twitter, but I know not everyone is on there. I'm not sure how long I'll be on Twitter anymore, or even if Unsung Horrors will be on there for much longer, just given the state of what's happening over there right now. So I did just want to encourage folks that if you're not already, you can follow this podcast on either Instagram or Facebook. We're most active on Instagram anyway. Facebook, we usually just post when there's new episodes or big announcements. Both of us are on Letterboxd and on Instagram, so you can follow both of us there. Lance's El Shaibi. I'm at Hex Massacre there. I will be having a couple of pretty big announcements in January, so I do hope that everyone is following over there. Obviously, I'll announce it on the episodes too, but a really big project that I've been working on for years. Lance is involved with it. Some past guests that we've had on the show are also involved with it. I'm really excited about it. I hope it's not going to be for everyone, but
it's for every one of you that are listening right now.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to say. I'm excited for this.
On top of that, I also have an essay coming out and an upcoming release from Vinegar Syndrome. Yes. And so I'll have an announcement about that as soon as that gets officially announced. I'm not allowed to say anything about it yet. So if you're not, please follow on those, or, just keep listening. You'll be able to stay up to date with that. Also in January, I'll be appearing on the Disconnected YouTube channel to chat with Ryan for a bit. At that point, I will be able to talk about what those announcements are as well.
Sweet.
So yeah, a lot of stuff coming up. So just wanted to get all that out of the way, just in case something happens between now and the end of the year on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. I already jumped off Twitter. I'm on Instagram, Letterboxd. I'm not going anywhere there. I mean, I'm going to miss, chatting and interacting with a lot of people and a lot of our listeners and just really cool people on Twitter, but hit me up on Instagram for sure. Let me know where you are and we could follow each other.
Yeah. We might end up on Hive eventually.
There's a lot of things being thrown out there at the moment.
So that's what's happening. I think that brings us all sort of up to date on everything. We might potentially have a guest for the Dragonfly for Each Corpse episode, not confirmed yet. So you'll find out when the episode comes out, I guess. So, so we already mentioned where to follow us. We'll be back in 3 weeks for our end of year episode covering our favorite new to us movies that we discovered this year and some Letterboxd stats with Lindsay and Anthony. And other than that, thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye.
I'm your brain, part of the central nervous system. Your cranium's my home, and if you want to learn, then listen. I'm the boss of all the functions in your body. I weigh about 3 pounds, but I'm the leader of the party. The cerebrum controls your thinking and your muscles. It also stores all memories. Without it, you would struggle. The left cerebrum controls the right side of the body, and the right cerebrum controls the left, though it is tiny. The cerebellum controls your posture and your balance. The coordination of your movement is also its talent. It's located in the lower back of your brain. It is rounded in structure, as I've gone on to explain. I'm your brain, part of the central nervous system. Your cranium's my home, and if you want to learn, then listen. I'm the boss of all the functions in your body. I weigh about 3 pounds, but I'm the leader of the party. Your brain stem is at the bottom of your brain, connecting brain to spinal cord to form a neural signal train. Your brain stem maintains vital control of your heart and lungs. It controls important reflexes to make sure your body runs. Your pineal gland produces all your precious melatonin, which can help you sleep at night and makes you wake up in the morning. I'm your brain, part of the central nervous system. nervous system. Your cranium's my home, and if you wanna learn, then listen. I'm the boss of all the functions in your body. I weigh about 3 pounds, but I'm the leader of the party.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!